Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 4, Episode 2 of MindClickers, where it's time to click both heads here in 2023. Today, I am joined by a longtime best buddy, former Renegades Partnership Manager, now Technical Operations Coordinator at Track 160, Nick Cardi Stefanidis. How you going, brother?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad we're finally able to get on and have a chat.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's been a long time coming, I think. It's definitely been discussed prior, but look, we've made time. We've figured out both schedules and we're aligned. We're here.
We're here, ready to rumble. I'm ready to pick your mind.
Go for it, mate. Absolutely. All yours.
So as we always do on MindClickers, as everyone knows, we sort of love to start wider then sort of narrow in gradually. So let's take it way back. Give us a flashback. How did you, I guess, get into esports, you know, sort of as a kid, and how did that sort of start to snowball into what led you into a career in esports?
Well, it's quite funny, you know, as a young fella, you know, you spend a lot of your time, like many other people, you know, playing video games with your mates, and, you know, it's all fun and games. And, you know, some games I was really, really good at, some games I just wasn't. And, you know, I was not aware of, you know, growing up at all, even into my, you know, mid to late teenage years, that there was a esport ecosystem, if you want to call it that, or a more serious level than competition ecosystem for, you know, different titles and games I played. I grew up with my mates, played FIFA, Call of Duty. I had a pretty standard entry into esports, but I soon realized quite quickly, and, you know, a lot of my friends had told me, you know, Nick, you're a little bit better than everyone else at, you know, certain games. Do you want to try esports? I said, esports? What on earth is esports? And, you know, I sort of had that, you know, that late, I don't want to say boomer approach, but, you know, that out of esports mindset of, I don't really know what it is. Do I want to try it? Like, you know, what is it? So, you know, I ducked deeper into, you know, what esports was and did some research, as much as a 16-year-old can do actual research. Sort of ducked into it, and I was playing FIFA at the time. Was probably the game I was playing the most. As I said, I'd like to think I was a little bit better than my mates, although they'll probably tell you extremely differently, but, you know, it was one of those things. And then I just started entering small competitions, you know, online PlayStation competition, game battle competitions, just, you know, stuff like that. Started off with everyone else, and, you know, after, you know, winning a couple of, you know, five person individual group tournaments, I was like, all right, let's see if there can be something in this. And, you know, I was okay. I wasn't great, you know, on that esport competitive level. I was, you know, verified to play in tournaments, but never was able to, you know, make the cutoff for, you know, LAN events or international events or nothing like that. I was skillful enough to compete, but not skillful enough to make a LAN or to make a, you know, make that type of level. And, you know, even to this day, you know, my mid-25s now, you know, 10, 11 years later, I still think I can do it.
Mm.
And I was a lot quicker reaction-wise when I was 16. So if there's no hope for me then, I can safely say there's definitely no hope for me now. But look, yeah, it was a very standard entry into esports, you know, gaming and whatnot. And then, you know, the more I ducked into it, Lockie, you know, I learned, you know, organizations, esport organizations, sponsors, partners, you know, owners, co-owners, you know, I learned the whole ecosystem, you know, over time. And, you know, I had different experiences in the ecosystem that I'm sure we'll touch on later that, you know, it led me to the knowledge I have now. So yeah, it was a pretty basic intro.
For sure. I feel it's like almost a stock standard throughout, you know, sort of a lot of guys nowadays growing up on COD 4, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops 1, Black Ops 2, and that sort of gives you a taste of esports and sort of what it is at its sort of ground level. Obviously, COD sort of transpired into sort of a different genre nowadays, competitive scene. But do you ever think and sort of reflect, like, if you had have stuck with a path of, you know, playing and maybe grinding away, where you might be nowadays, would be a current player?
That definitely drifts into my head every now and then when I get a bit nostalgic. I definitely think maybe if I stayed, you know, playing Call of Duty, you know, as I said before, I played Call of Duty with my mates, Black Ops 2, you know, we all had, I'm not sure if it was called ranked play back then, but, you know, there was that competitive mode and, you know, I was in the top, as top as, you know, the ladder would take, you know, I was top 3, top 4. For quite a while. So I sometimes tell myself, yeah, if I stuck to a path, I could have been better. But considering how, you know, my journey in esports outside of esports turned out, I really wouldn't change how I did anything. You know, sure, I look back and I think, yeah, maybe I could have made a living out of it. You know, But, you know, at that age, at that time, I'm all about having fun. I wasn't more so seriously enough about, you know, competitiveness and winning. You know, back then, you know, back on what year it'd be, 2014, early, you know, 2010s, whatever you want to call it, no one really knew you could make a living out of doing, you know, playing Call of Duty. Even the people playing competitively or, you know, ranked play, if you want to call it that, not even they knew that you can make a living out of it. If, you know, if times were different and I knew what I knew back then naturally, I definitely would have stuck at it, you know, content creation, posting YouTube videos, whatever, whatever. But yeah, look, all in all, I think I'm sort of happy how it turned out, regardless if I didn't make a living out of it or not.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the most important thing, sort of appreciating the journey along the way and, you know, whether you go into the pro pathway and, you know, to be fair as it already is, it's such a very minority of gamers that actually enter into a pro pathway. You think of pro teams, you think of Rocket League, there's three players on a team. But how many are in the top levels, right? It is a sort of a very tricky domain, but, you know, as long as you, at the end of the day, appreciate the journey you've had and where you've ended up, then that's the main thing, right?
Correct, correct. I think, yeah, it's just one of those things, I suppose. You know, you don't dwell on it too much and, you know, you live, you learn, you have fun along the way. I think that's all part of the process.
For sure, definitely. Now, you mentioned earlier sort of you had a bit of a taste test of organizations and, you know, you started to sort of travel and sort of traverse into the organizational world and what it means to be an esports organization. You know, obviously I met you on Renegades, but sort of how did that sort of snowball into Renegades?
Well, it was quite an interesting thing. So once I realized, and I realized pretty quickly, that I definitely didn't have the caliber to make a living out of it and play professionally, I sort of drew sort of best interests and talents outside of esports and gaming. At the time growing up, you know, we're talking maybe only 5 or 6 years ago, maybe I was at university, studied a Bachelor of Sport Management. Obviously, there was business. I grew up in a very sales household.
Right.
I didn't get the conventional, you know, everyone gets to go camping, go fishing, you know. I spent most of my time crawling into my dad's office, listening to him do, you know, sale meetings and pitches and all the rest of it. That's sort of how I grew up, and I'm, you know, very thankful for that in the way my life's turned out now. So that was a big thing for me, partnerships, sales. And I sort of wanted to do the best of both worlds. I wanted to be able to do sales and do esports. And I sort of realized quite quickly after doing some research, you know, all these organizations have players they have to pay for, you know, graphics they have to pay for, video editing, et cetera, et cetera. They have to fund the organization as itself. You know, the most organizations are looking to break even or make profit. So, you know, I was like, okay, maybe I can put the two and two together. So I tried to do that as best as I could, reached out to, you know, it was like cold calling when you get a first sales job. I was just reached out to Twitter organizations, you know, through an Instagram, through Facebook, just messaging saying, look, you know, this is who I am. This is what I've studied. You know, I've got prior experience outside of, you know, esports and gaming, doing sales, you know, and partnerships and stuff like that, you know, more traditional sales and partnerships. Is there any way, you know, you can give me like a trial or, you know, take a look at my CV, you know, stuff like that. And got really, really lucky with a fantastic organization out of the UK called Omen Origins. They were mainly Call of Duty based, you know, that old school type of organization, Call of Duty montages.
Yeah.
All the rest, they wanted to move into esports and competitive gaming. And they said, look, we're looking to purchase a team. Maybe can you help out with some sales, you know, try help us soften the blow, if you want to call it that, for the owners going out of pocket. Because if anyone knows, that's actually really expensive to run an organization, especially if you're looking into that esports and gaming, you know, sort of venture. Sure, we'll touch on that later, but it's a very expensive thing. So they got me out doing sales. I was able to get them enough money where it was good enough for the owner to go a little bit out of pocket, plus the sales that came on board, you know, and I sort of just spent my time there learning as much as I could about the esport ecosystem. It was a completely different ecosystem to more your traditional sales. You know, different mindsets, different abilities, different, you know, budgets, different awareness, you know, different stuff like that. So different approaches. So it was a real learning curve, and it was all due to experiences and whatnot. So I spent about 3 or 4 months there. Unfortunately, the team didn't play as well as we thought, you know, typical, you know, I wouldn't say typical, but, you know, organizational esport activities, you know, these things can change. So my time was there up, and through them, I met a good friend still to this day called Xander Clive. He started an esport organization based down in Canada. called Luck Reserve. Again, more of that traditional esports type of organization with, you know, the traditional Call of Duty montages. Again, wanted to move into esports and gaming, make that transition to competitive gaming. Did where I could again there with sales, partnerships, et cetera, was able to, you know, provide, you know, at that time it was for me traditional partnerships or promo codes or, you know, not that real funding ability at that level, but more of the to get their feet off the ground type of activities.
Mm.
So a lot of what I dealt with and, you know, that was becoming, I wouldn't say it easy for me, but I became quite natural at it, obviously coming from a sales background. And then after Luck Reserve, I decided I wanted something more out of it. I sort of understood what needed to be done for a caliber team that, you know, had that backing or had that background. I really took my chances. I sort of risked my whole career, if you wish to call it that, on the fact that I wanted to move away from the team and maybe try something on my own or try, you know, land myself in a bigger organization, you know, to better myself and better them and sort of just have a win-win all the way around. And it was it's actually a really embarrassing story. I'm not sure if I've actually ever told you this, but I applied. I saw Renegades looking for partnership managers, Hitmarker. For those of you who don't know what Hitmarker is, I'm sure many of you do, but it's a place to find esport and gaming related jobs. Fantastic sites. Definitely haven't paid any for promotion on this, but I definitely vouch for them. But I actually applied for the job, Lachlan, and oh, this is embarrassing, but I applied and forgot to attach my resume.
Oh, heck.
So it was a bit embarrassing because I really wanted the job. I looked at the job description, really liked what I saw, liked the freedom and the capabilities I got, the ability to prove myself, and I applied and forgot to attach the resume, which was a bit of an L, if you want to call it that. It was a bit of an awkward moment, and, you know, you can't go back and do it twice.
Yeah.
So I sort of stuck with what I got. But yeah, look, it was one of those things. And I ended up going on Twitter and saying, oh, you know, looking at Renegades, partnership director. I was trying to get a hold of anyone just to say, look, I applied, but I forgot my resume. Resume, if you wanted it. Couldn't find anyone at the time. And yeah, it sort of went dead for about 3-4 months. I was a bit unsure if I'd ever get the opportunity. One morning, I received a follow on my... through Twitter, and there was a direct message sitting in the inbox, and it said, you know, Nick, we saw you applied, you know, we've heard of your past deals and, you know, your past abilities. Would you like to jump in a call? And mind you, myself, like you, Lachlan, based in, you know, Victoria, Australia, a call for them was, you know, me jumping out of bed at 3 a.m. But, you know, I was hungry for it. So I leapt out of bed.
I
slothed out of my bed to get where I wanted to be. Chucked on the headset, chucked on a shirt. I'm not going to say how clean it was. Regardless, it was a shirt.
No.
Made it all professional, and they gave me the opportunity. So I'm very thankful for that opportunity. And then the story of myself, Renegades, getting to know you and working somewhat alongside you and you helping me helping you. And yeah, look, it was a fantastic experience. We'd definitely go back and do it all again if I had the chance. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a crazy story to sort of, you know, sort of be sitting around for such a long time, because, you know, most people sort of maybe forget about roles like a month or 2 months, but you know, the fact that they actually followed up, up the gates. You know, I think that, you know, in a way, do you think that really gave you more of an insight into the industry, with obviously Renegades being quite a high level noticeable org, you know, their CS team, obviously the Rocket League team, pretty good team. But, you know, did that give you a bit of an insight into a bit more of a professional organization, would you say?
Yeah, it definitely gave me experience and knowledge in understanding what an elite organization is like at its peak.
Yeah.
Right? You've got multiple factors, things I didn't know I needed to realize. There's certain companies I couldn't talk to due to conflicts, you know, things like that, where I wasn't aware of that at a lower level. Obviously, I was aware of that in sales, but wasn't aware that was in the ecosystem for esports. So I learned a few things on the way, got to teach other people a few things on the long way, different how to approach different people, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I got to, you know, be a part of, you know, major deals. I had my ups, I had my downs, like everyone else does in a sales role. It's, you know, it's very, you know, be the be the best or don't be. So, you know, it was, I definitely learned quite a lot, and especially with the time zone as well. So I was an Australian, obviously Australian partnership manager, one of three members in that partnership team. And it was quite a unique time zone to be working in. Our morning chats were, you know, 2, 3 a.m. or 5, 4 a.m. my time. Yes, update sales meetings, pipeline meetings, you know, you name it. They were all quite conventional for everyone else. And then for me, I really had to chalk the sleep schedule, which is quite hard, especially if you want to talk to Australian business people, you know, potential sponsors and partners, investors. You know, you're talking to these groups of people on a 9-to-5 basis in Australia. On the contrary, you're doing all your sales meetings, your update pipelines at a time that's 9-to-5 for the other side of the planet. So it was quite a hard balance, and it was something I really had to, I was pretty much on night shift, if you'd want to call it that.
Yeah.
I was on a night shift role, and it's something I should have thought of and I didn't think of. And it was something I just had to learn and adapt and, you know, push my way through. So yeah, it was an experience. I've definitely, as I said, would do it again, but yeah, it definitely gave me a big insight.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess one thing I'm really curious about, you know, as you sort of mentioned it from your perspective, you know, the esports ecosystem, like you mentioned earlier, is very vast and domain. And I think the biggest thing we can compare in the esports system is regions, right? Obviously, the Renegades being, you know, primarily based out of North America, but obviously having teams within Oceania. You know, from its standpoint, from your perspective, how do you see a North American org being different towards an org that's primarily just based in Oceania?
I think, unfortunately for the organization, it comes down to just region-based. Now, what I mean by that is, and people might see a bit confused when you say NA versus OC, it's not one versus the other. That's the wrong way to look at what I'm going to be saying. It's you have to understand that a lot of the partnerships, the backing, the investors, the success of the organization comes from, obviously, these types of individuals, sponsors and whatnot, but they all come from outside of esports. Now, North America is a very esport-friendly and developed country, if you want to call it that, right? It's very developed and understands esports and understands its possibilities for people and individuals that understand what needs to be done. Unfortunately, here in OCE, and forgive me, I'm trying to chalk my way through some lighting because it's gotten quite dark here in Melbourne.
Oh, good.
It's one of those things where you have to look at the backing of the nation and region. So OCE is quite, it's not quite understood what esports is. And I can give you an example on that in a minute. You know, it's not understood of what esports can do, you know, the possibilities, international recognition. You know, it's got a lot of different variables. And unfortunately for organizations, you're a culprit of your region's understanding of what you are as not an organization, but as a business.
Yeah.
And what you do. So sometimes it's unfortunate. You know, we've got some absolutely star organizations in OCE that have been able to break that mold. You know, you look at Chiefs, Direwolves, you know, these are organizations that have, you know, been able to compete on international stages and give Australia that, you know, that, oh my God, we're here, and sort of help Australia to understand, all right, this isn't just something your kid is spending time on. It's a future path for, you know, many individuals that actually have a pure talent for what they do, whether it's legal, Counter-Strike, FIFA, Call of Duty, whatever it may be. Unfortunately, again, for organizations, you're quite region-locked in your success. You know, it's a minority that make it through that sort of gap and sort of make it through that bridge compared to NA, where I feel not that not every organization is going to make it to the elite level, but I would like to say, and this is, again, from an outside point of view, that there's more of an opportunity. You know, your chances are higher compared to if you were OCE. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. You know, there's nothing we can do about changing that. You know, we can keep performing as esports, we can keep educating. But unfortunately, this current position we're in, there's quite a lot of understanding, but there's not enough push for it. You know what I mean? There's understanding of what it is now due to massive events like PAX, DreamHack, Game Expo. You know, there's plenty of these events that are coming. Got esport bars, you know, all these things are popping up. There's recognition, but there's no push.
Yeah.
Which you know, unlike NA, there's push as well, which, you know, they've got college universities, you know, you've got college, you know, you've got CRL.
Yeah.
College, COD, you know, if I had that opportunity here in OCE, good luck at me out of my bedroom. I lived in there. I would have been scrimming all day, every day. But again, that's sort of the situation. Esport organizations and groups are sort of put into, and it's unfortunate, but again, it's something that, you know, we learn here at OCE to work with.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think from, you know, obviously my perspective, I can see things differently as a coach, because I sort of see the, I guess, I don't see the business side of things as much, right? I don't see the ecosystem from a profit-making perspective, or I don't look at it from that sort of angle, just because I don't, yeah, obviously sort of associate with that angle, but I think it's a super important thing, because, you know, you look at organizations, look at people who want to start organizations, especially with NOCE, you know, starting an organization is probably a pretty tricky thing, right? You know, because, you know, how do you even go about that at the end of the day?
Yeah, look, it's quite a tricky thing. And I think what everyone forgets is there's a lot of money involved. You know, if you're able to put yourself in a position, your brand in a position where you can bring on investors, you can do funding, you can gain sponsorships to back it. You know, it comes down to the whole situation of it's not what you know, right? It's who you know.
Yeah.
And that plays a very big part in business, whether it's esports or not. But, you know, I've definitely had my times dabbling in trying to start my own esports organization. And even for myself, in the career that I've had, you know, the sales record I've had, the knowledge that I have, it was extremely hard even for me. Just being able to make people understand and sort of educate them that, you know, it's not a gamble, but it is a gamble. You know what I mean? It's quite hard to deepen, you know, cut into your own pockets and burn cash. And I know there's a large trend going around on, you know, OCE Twitter regarding esports. You know, if you want to start an esport organization, you know, you may as well just set your cash on fire in front of you and at least you get to see it burn. But, you know, that's the name of the game. And I think that's where tribute and praise is to people like Chief, Star Wolves. You know, I'm sure I'm missing a bunch off the top of my head already. But, you know, that's where praise, you know, Ground Zero, you know, there's a lot of praise for these organizations. Mind Freak, don't know how I missed that, but, you know, there's a lot of praise to these organizations. They were having to make it through the tough times and into the good times. You know, it's not all smooth sailing. You know, they're always not going to be flush, but they're still here after so long of a time in an ecosystem that really chops and changes. So it's a real credit to those who can pull it off, and to those who can't, it's a learning journey, because you're not the only person that's wanted to start an esports organization and it's failed. You know, you're not the only one. It just is what it is. And I think that's where certain people come into play, certain roles, certain business roles, partnership managers, you know, people that look after investors, people go and find investors.
Hmm.
You know, all these types of roles is definitely something that, you know, can be looked at and be presented to organizations. But look, it's just one of those things, Lachlan. You know, it's a catch-22. You really want it and you can get it, but if it doesn't happen, it's a learning experience and you just sort of move forward from there.
Yeah, I think the experience and sort of testing it and seeing if it works. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you don't give it a track, if you don't give it a crack, you don't know, right? Right. And I think that's the most important thing to sort of understand, and maybe even, you know, going in towards starting an esports organization, understanding that maybe if it's easier to have the mindset that, hey, this is going to fail, because, yeah, you know, you can sort of take all the hits on knowing these hits are going to come, right? Rather than sort of going through the process and then having to unexpectedly deal with something, that might be a little bit more harder than if you already know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think it is a very interesting perspective. And I guess one thing that I was sort of thinking about, as you sort of mentioned, you know, sort of experiences and sort of partnerships and sponsorships and all that sort of stuff, is, you know, we look towards esports organizations nowadays, we look to partnerships and, you know, some sponsorships don't really make a lot of sense for an organization. And I guess, you know, from your experience, your understanding, and maybe even your approach and mindset towards it, you know, is it just worth to take whatever partnership, whatever sponsor you get? Is it important to symbolize with the brand and have sort of a joint interest, or is it just a matter of trying to get as much funding as possible?
Look, that's very individual, and by individual, I mean the sport organization itself. It's very individualized, yeah, in that sense. You know, some esports organizations are in a fantastic position where they can choose brand partnerships and sponsorships in relation to who they are as an organization.
Yeah.
And they have that ability to say, look, no, we're not interested because that doesn't align with our, you know, our timeline or our methods or our beliefs. Other organizations are just not in that position to negotiate yes or a no.
Yeah.
It's we need something just to survive. And, you know, the common person in esports will understand that, recognize it. I can think of a handful of things off the top of my head that I saw partnerships that just don't make any sense.
Mm.
But there's always more to face value.
Yeah.
You know, there's always more to that. You know, especially, you know, the whole crypto involvement with esports and the crossover metaverse, Web3, you know, it's an understandable. Sure, they may not align with the core value, but you have to understand from a business point of view, there is upside to that. Sure, you might cop a bit of a hit on the socials or engagement. It might be a bit lower or it might be even higher, but it's not the reaction you may want it.
Yeah.
You know, regardless, you've got to, at some point, stand back from a consumer and start putting yourself in a business set of shoes and say, look, all right, maybe the business is struggling. Maybe they needed that flux of cash. You know, maybe this partnership paid up front, if that ever happens. But if they do, don't forget to call me. But, you know, it's these things, it's very relative to esport organization situation events. So some might make sense, some might not. You know, good example is TSM and FTX prior to the crash. Right? That it didn't really make sense. You know, TSM, such a large global brand, you know, very renowned, very respectable, very well built, very well maintained. Why go and do a deal with, you know, a crypto? Well, again, looking at it from a business side, although the ending I'm sure was not what anyone ever expected, you have to look at it from a business point of view. Maybe they needed the money. Maybe they wanted to do a venture. Maybe they had an idea that they had in concept they wanted to put in production. You know, there's multiple things you could think of. So although it may not make sense to the consumer, to the fan, at the point in time, you have to understand organizations, although they're for the fans, they're also a business.
Yeah.
Have to start looking at it a bit like that. But, you know, it comes and goes. There's also some really good partnerships, you know, some that make a lot of sense. And, you know, it's one of those things. You see organizations partnering with Nike because they're going to do a, you know, a nice apparel line. Mm. Well, that makes sense. Nike or Adidas or Puma. You know, Lacoste, anyone, Ralph Lauren. Like, that's Louis Vuitton. You know, it makes complete sense. Stuff like that makes sense, but you also have to look at a financial set as well. So, look, it goes both ways, but there's definitely some scenarios where it does make sense and others you just shake your head and wonder what went on there. But, you know, it's all for something. It's never for nothing.
Yeah, for sure. And almost the way that I sort of look at it is, say, for example, you are a new esports organization and you sort of reach for whatever you want to get, reach for a little bit of funding here or a little bit of there, whatever it is, and you can use that funding to build a team. And then that team can be accelerated into a new level and they can reach a new major or they can go to Worlds and that'll maybe bring about new sponsorships, partnerships, which may be more closely aligned, right? So it's almost like using that as an investment into the team with the end goal to have better partnerships, different partnerships.
Yeah. Agreed.
For sure.
Agreed.
Definitely. Now, I know this is an area you've sort of been investigating and having a look into, and I'm very curious to pick your mind about it. And obviously, it's this idea of AI. Now, it is evolving nowadays. I've been using a little bit of ChatGPT, and it's a bit crazy. So talk to me about AI from your perspective, and I guess within esports, what sort of ways could it be incorporated, do you reckon?
You know, AI is one of those things, and it's something I've moved into now full-time since being, you know, involved in esports and partnership managing and all the rest. Something quite passionate to me. And I, you know, it's quite early days in AI development and all the rest of it. So it's a really good time to get in. You know, if you're ever thinking about it, or, you know, this isn't a shameless plug, forgive me, but, you know, if it's something that you find interesting, now's the time, because we're in that, you know, it reminds me of those early days of crypto. Now, everyone regrets they didn't get in at the start knowing what they know now.
Yeah.
You know, this same gamble with AI. But in terms of esports, within games and how games are played, you're going to have to look at stuff like how the games are actually built. You know, I was only talking to a really good friend of mine today in a meeting. We were talking about AI and talking about how it can help assist building games. You know, there might be ways to, you know, quicken up a timeline for a video game. The next Call of Duty, this year is it's a 2-year cycle. If they have an AI assisting building their game with a particular set of algorithms, it may be a 1-game cycle because they're able to push a game out quicker. You know, it can help with updates. It can help on the business side of esports, you know, investigating pipelines, assisting with sales, you know. And I'm not going to sit here and say you just have to kick your feet up on your desk, press a button and the AI runs about like iRobot and does what it's going up. But it makes your life easier. Like it does the pipeline. It does the calculations. It gives you estimations, which in business is critical. And especially in esports, everyone wants to know what's going to happen in the future, because that way you can save yourself. And AI, you know, provides that ability. Sure, the accuracy is a bit hit and miss. Again, variables, we know that. But there are multiple things that the AI can do to assist and just make your life easier. You know, as you said with ChatGPT, like, I'm going to come out and say it on this podcast. If you've received an email from me in the last week, it wasn't from me. You know, it was from chat. I didn't write it. I set it up as an assistant. I put in a few keywords for the emails, let it write it and review it, and I hit send. You know, it makes your life easier. It's not here to take over. It's not here to... Sure, there are some things in esports and gaming that it can replace, you know, human movement and human decisions. You might look at games where there's ability to judge who wins a fight, et cetera, or wins a battle. You know, human judging can be replaced with AI judging. How accurate will that be, you know? Yeah. Stuff like that. There's 100 variables, but that's all part of the process. And it's definitely nowhere near perfect, but it's an industry that's fluxing, and it can almost have the same crossover, I dare say, as the Web3 to crypto in esport. It's just in a different way. It's not so much funding. It's not so much getting involved with in-game characters and all the rest. It's more about the construction of esports as the ecosystem, you know, and things like ChatGPT, they're this very bare minimum of AI. You know, as you said in the intro, I work for a company that uses, you know, an AI and motion tracking to track, you know, soccer players and athletes all around the globe, you know, here in Melbourne to, you know, Israeli leagues in the Middle East. It's the bare minimum of what the AI can do. It has endless possibilities. And I thought it sounds cliche, but it's just true, right? Like, people come to your Web3 crypto, you know, it's this and that. It's cliche, but the fact is it's true. You're just sick of hearing about it. So, look, it has massive upside potential, but at the same time, it's a flip of a coin, Lachlan. You know, you have your upside, but it also has your downsides. You might see a fair few loss of jobs, you know, in esport business as a player, as a, you know, a businessman, if you want to call yourself that. Your job's never really secure. And if anyone follows me on Twitter, my timeline's sometimes filled with random 3 a.m. in the field. How no one's jobs are safe in esports. Look at 100 Thieves.
Yeah.
You know, look at Ace Clan. You know, anything can happen in a click of a moment. So, AI may eliminate that as a whole. It may already take the jobs away. It's very controversial in that sense, but it's not here to take over. It's not like iRobot. It's not here to take over and, you know, we're all going to become, you know, the ChatGPT what it is to us. You know, it's here to assist and help. So I think there's a massive possibility for crossover. To say where it's going to happen specifically, besides the business side, I can't really tell you. Maybe game development. It's hard to tell because it's not at its peak yet. So it's still early days. Some really high Q person, you know, which is not that hard to be any smarter than me. You can develop something with a couple hundred algorithms, you know, a couple hundred thousand algorithms, and make something that changes esports forever. We don't know, but that's the possibility AI had. So it's good, but it's also bad. You know, that's evolution as a whole, I think.
Yeah. The way that I've sort of looked at it, and the way you've described it in that sense is, you know, you sort of mentioned briefly the whole Web3 and crypto integration within esports in comparison to AI. It's almost like I look at it like a house. There's two houses. One house is the Web3 AI or the Web3 crypto house, and it's, you know, it's a stock standard house, but it's fancy. It's got decorations. It's got a nice TV. In comparison to the AI house, it's maybe a little bit more robust. It's a little bit more structured. And it's being able to maybe be replicated a lot more easier, efficiently. And that's the way I sort of look at AI sort of, and towards the progression of it, being able to sort of help put systems in place that can be easily replicated, easily augmented onto already existing problems. I think that is probably the key foundation AI is going to play within esports.
100%. It's got serious possibilities, but we just need a really smart person to come along and actually show us, because, you know, that's all it will take is one serious AI, you know, algorithm, software, product, whatever you want to call it. That's all it will take. I'm sorry if you can hear the dog barking in the background.
That's all right.
And I like to chirp at all types of hours. But, yeah, look, it's one of those things where it just takes one person to change the game, and I think it'll be changed forever.
I guess it's probably too far-fetched to say, because you take away the human element of it, but do you reckon we're ever going to get to a point in 5-10 years whereby AI is literally just going to outpace, you know, human players in terms of esports, and we're going to have AI teams versus AI teams?
No. Because as individuals, we won't allow that, right? There's a limit. What people forget is we control it. It doesn't control us. You know, you're in control of your own product. You're in control of your own creation. Now, history will tell you sometimes people don't think the same way, but we are interested in esports, and, you know, we're here to see each other play well. We want to see, you know, the Call of Duty lands. You know, we want to see the people win a game 250-0, 3-0, stand up and just let them know about it.
Let them know about it.
You know, we want to see RLCS regionals and RLCS championships. You know, people getting reverse swept and then standing up and just letting other people know how they feel, you know, and the noise of the crowd and how it makes you feel and going to these events in person. We as humans, we as evolution shouldn't, and I feel we won't allow it to take over to that extent.
Yeah.
But sure, it'll come to the extent of maybe an AI is training you on how to become better. You know, maybe unfortunately, lucky you're out of a job. We don't know, right? But, you know, that's not 5-10 years away. That's further than that. You know, we also have to understand that it was like crypto at some point. Not everyone was very acceptant of crypto in its first 5 to 7 years of a startup, right? Everyone, or you're into crypto, or you're a scammer, you know, you know, sure, that's out there. That's out there. That's factual. But not everyone was so acceptance of it. And I think with AI and what it resembles, obviously movies, I keep saying iRobot, but yeah, it's as close as I can get it to make sense. You know, we're not very acceptance of change as individuals, as humans. So it'll be, sure, the product will be out there, but it doesn't mean it will be in our face doing our thing. So I think we're looking at a decade plus.
Interesting. Yeah, no, definitely very interesting. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see the sort of the progression, because we think, and I guess we look at esports now and we look five years ago, it's not like it is now, right? So even within this industry, it's rapidly growing, it's rapidly expanding. So it's only going to be even more interesting to see where it is in the next 5 years.
No, look, it'll be something special. It'll be something special. Someone will come up with something amazing, but again, for it to adapt and take over our place, and, you know, you're not watching Call of Duty players play each other, you're watching, you know, AIs go at it. If we won't allow that as fans, as individuals, you know. Esports is our bread and butter. It's our love. It's, you know, we get up 4 in the morning, we check notifications. Is there anything we can watch? You know, we're looking for that human-on-human activity and that emotion that comes with esports.
Yeah,
you know, there's nothing funny than watching a CDL game go on. He goes to turn and shoot someone, and he realizes he's out of ammo.
Yeah,
like when there's comedy in that. You don't get that with the AI, because the AI would know to reload 2 shots earlier.
Yeah.
Then you got to look at it like that. So there's a part of it. There's about a human error we actually enjoy. So I don't see that happening for a long time. But when it does, we'll all know about it. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. I really appreciate that insight, Nick, because I think that a lot of people wouldn't really have that, I guess, key understanding yet. Maybe some of the listeners sort of understanding of AI and obviously that sort of human element aspect I actually hadn't even thought about. So you do raise a very good point there, which I think a lot of people listening are going to really appreciate for sure.
No, look, it's one of those things where you just got to remember it is crazy technology. You know, if everyone listening, it is coming. Don't ignore it. It's coming, but we can take our time with it. It's going to be a good decade before it's even partially accepted. Governments have to regulate it. You know, look at crypto. That's still not regulated, and that's been around for, what, a good part of 10 years now.
Yeah.
Right? So even that's still not regulated. They're only just getting around to regulating it after what happened with FTX. So you look at that, AI is just in that early beginning stage. We've got a decade, maybe even 2 decades before regulation starts happening. So I wouldn't worry about it, but I'd definitely get in it, research it. If you love it, try find a job or a role in it. Maybe even try learn programming, try build something yourself, you know, something as simple as, you know, the most basic single 2, 3, 5, 10 lines of algorithm for an AI and just see where the journey takes you. It's all about having fun on the way. If you're not having fun on what you're doing, you're doing the wrong thing, 100%.
Perfect. An absolute banger to sort of almost wrap the episode up there. And I think a really good insight into, I guess, the possibility, but also maybe even a bit of advice along the way.
Now, look, I'm all about wise wisdom. You gave me plenty of it when we worked together, so I can only try to repay the favor.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Now, you mentioned your socials a little bit before. Where can everyone listening find you, you know, chuck a few rants at it for him?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. He doesn't, so I don't expect anyone else listening to read it either, but Twitter is Nicholas Carty, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S, and then Carty, C-A-R-T-Y, much like the artist. That's probably the main one. My LinkedIn will just be my full name, so Nick Stefanides, you know, feel free to shoot me a message with questions, you know, whatever it may be, feel free to pick my brain. Those are the two main ones. I know I don't have a TikTok. I know there is a TikTok with Nick Carty out there. It's not me. It's all right.
You've been sniped.
Yeah, I think I've been IRL sniped. I think someone's catching on to my extreme popularity, Lachlan. You know, if I was a footballer, Lockie, I could have been a model, but, you know, I'm not. So I think people are just trying to hedge their bets on that.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, lovely. I'll also chuck them in the episode description below. So for everyone listening, you can chuck the link there and check Nick out and chuck a message if you are keen to learn more about AI partnerships, everything within the esports world, and I guess what's to come. But yeah, Nick, look, this was a sick episode, really providing me with a bit of an insight and stuff I'm not too familiar with. And I'm sure I know an insight into this world that a lot of other people wouldn't know as well. So your knowledge and sort of experience and understanding within this field with the partnership with AI is very much appreciated. And I say it on behalf of the viewers, appreciated from their behalf as well.
Now, look, it was an absolute honor to be here. As I said, it was a long time in the making. Very happy that our calendars finally aligned. You know, as I said, if, you know, it's not my knowledge you want to absorb, previous episodes from Mind Clickers, you know, Lachlan's always got some great stuff. I know the future's big for him and Mind Clickers. So, you know, stay tuned for more, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess if you have made it this far into the episode, we hadn't really talked about it, but obviously, you know, you are sort of coming on Mind Clickers and joining me on this venture as a strategic advisor as well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to sort of where we can build this journey together and sort of how we can branch out globally and expand Mind Clickers into all the listeners worldwide.
No, look, it's going to be a fantastic journey. If it's anything like how our previous relationship went down at working with each other at Renegades, we're going to set this place on fire 100%. This place is going to blow. So I'm keen for it. Can't wait.
Love that. Definitely. That's for sure. All right, Nick. Well, I appreciate you jumping on for today's episode. And, you know, make sure to, I don't want to say make sure to have a good one because that's weird and not.
Well, it is 9 p.m. It is 9 p.m, Lachlan. So I don't know how much of a good one I'm going to have, mate. Probably an hour and go to bed, mate. But look, you know, I will have a fantastic rest of my night. I hope you do too.
Awesome, Nick. Thanks very much for jumping on and see you in the next one.
Perfect. Appreciate it, mate. Have a good one.
Thank you.